Deadwood Soundwave.
Welcome to a Cosmic Void. I'm Biggs.
I'm Xavion.
And today we're doing Girls Trip from 2017. All right, Xavi, this was your choice. Why are we doing this movie?
Actually, I feel like you ask me questions every time. I want to know, did you enjoy this movie?
I did. I enjoyed it
okay.
A lot.
We mostly enjoy a lot of movies we talk about. We were just talking before we even started. I like to get you on like a bunch of just random movies. You've shown me some where you're like, oh, dude, I would totally watch that, you know?
I don't know why I didn't see this one, because I was looking up and I was like, 2017, that was one of the years that I had the movie pass, and so I saw everything in the theaters, and I don't know how I missed this one. I really don't, because usually it's like 2017. I've like seen everything that came to Helena.
Yeah,
and I think this came to Helena, and so I'm just wondering why I didn't see it.
But I feel like where we live, I mean, I lived in Cody, Wyoming.
This movie was too big for us to have not gotten it.
You know what I mean?
Like, but this, that would have been true 15 years ago, but
right,
now if
but
it's
now,
a big movie, we get it.
And I was gonna say, yeah, back then I'm pretty sure it played in Wyoming, and I was like, oh, cool, you know. So do you ever notice like when something has like a simple name to it, it's not very memorable. It's not like Oppenheimer, you know what I mean? You're like, oh my gosh, I remember it was Oppenheimer. And so that's where it was kind of like, you hear Girls Trip and you're just kind of like, oh yeah, that was the, you know, that movie that was coming out, you know?
Yeah, well, I remember the buzz around it and wanting to see it, mm-hmm. and I just don't know, maybe I was like really busy at the time or something, because that 2017 I would have had all four kids at home. Maybe that was it.
It could have been, actually.
Maybe that was why
there's where it was. I really don't know, because I never went and saw it in theaters. I had heard about it. I didn't think it was going to be as good or as funny as it is, but if I see a group of people and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to see them in movies, I get excited.
Well, and at this point I would have absolutely gone just off of Tiffany Haddish alone, because
exactly.
I was looking it up and Keanu came out about half a year before this movie,
mm-hmm.
and I remember watching that and she was a revelation in that movie, and I was just like, she is so talented so funny. And what's great is like, she doesn't really show range in this movie. She's just like the crazy friend off to the side, because they're very archetypal, I think, except for Queen Latifah. It's the one character of the four I feel like she doesn't really have a personality, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but like the other four are very well defined, right? Like you have
Gina.
Ryan is like
she's kind of the successful.
Yeah, she's also kind of what everybody else revolves around, because like the plot is really around her.
Right.
And you watch her and you're like, okay, very driven person.
Mm.
Like, so I get that archetype. You have Dina, who is very much the party animal, right? And you understand that like the older they get, the more they don't grow up.
Yeah, and Dina just hasn't grown. She's still Dina, you know? She's wild, and I'll be honest, Dina's very ghetto.
Yeah, and then you get Lisa, which honestly, if I was to be in a group of old friends,
you're Lisa,
like that, yeah, I would be Lisa now, because I would be the one who's like worried about checking in with my kid, mm-hmm. and like wanting to go out but also not wanting to get crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like I see myself in that character. It's weird because Queen Latifah is probably the biggest name of the four, I think. Maybe Jada Pinkett Smith.
And that's, well,
but I mean,
honestly,
like Queen Latifah has been doing it for longer.
I mean,
you know
we're
what
talking
I mean?
Living Single days, you know?
Dude,
like
before Living Single. She was big in the 80s, man.
She was, and she was rapping and stuff too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, she's by far, I think,
iconic, if
you take into account older Generation X,
mm-hmm.
like Queen Latifah is the most known of all of them, right? And, like,
she's
been the lead in movies. I'm not sure Jada Pinkett Smith has ever been the lead per se in like mm-hmm. a big movie.
She did Shaft.
Right, but I mean, Shaft is the main character in Shaft. You know what I mean?
Oh, you mean the main. I thought, even as like a sidekick role.
Oh, no. I just mean like in terms of like name on
not, the... Not that I... Nothing like Girls Trip. Like, she was in Matrix. We did Shaft. I mean, Jada...
Right, but she's always...
Set It Off.
One of my favorite horror movies when I was in high school was Tales from the Crib, Demon Knight. And like Jada Pinkett Smith, that was my introduction to her. Or at least when I became aware of who she was, was that movie. And she is the lead, but you don't know that going in because there's so many characters.
Okay.
And it's a horror movie, so people are dying as you go along, and she's the final girl, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Well, and like I said, she was also in...
I'm not trying to reduce
her
star or anything. It's just like
really,
Queen Latifah to me is
the most iconic. And you would think that in this movie her role would be a little bit stronger.
It's not that it's not strong. I'm trying to like nail this down. Like, I almost feel like they're like, everybody knows Queen Latifah, so they gave her the kind of the role that wasn't super defined, I felt like, because
that makes sense.
People know who she is, so they don't really think about it. She doesn't fit an archetype like the other ones do. Like, she's struggling, but you don't really see the struggle that much. You just don't know whether she's gonna drop the
dime.
We
see you hiding your tags.
Yeah. I don't think this is a Queen Latifah problem. It's just like, I don't think the character was very well defined on the
page. It really wasn't. I think because, again, there wasn't really anything before the movie. I think it really, really was supposed to be a fun movie. And maybe that character did get pushed off a little bit to the side. And they were, because again, like you said, it is Queen Latifah.
Well, and she's definitely holding it down.
Yes.
And like, she's present in every scene and she's got things to do. It's not that she doesn't have things to do. If I'm to like describe the other characters,
you remember them.
Yeah. I did it already. Like, you know, one or two sentences.
But you don't
I've
look
like
at,
described it. I can't describe
you can't
her
look
one or
at
two
Sasha.
Sentences.
Yeah, because even if you think
it's
about
just strange.
It, she's not giving like reporter. She's not like, you know, you just see her kind of struggling, like, oh, I need to make money. Oh, someone's calling me. Oh, the celebrity's calling me out because I called them out. You do see a lot of that, but you're not.
You know who's the archetype that's usually in this movie, who's not in this movie? You usually have somebody who has the agenda. And they're always like, okay, no, we need to hurry up. We need to get over here because we got this at this time.
I thought they were trying to do that with Lisa, but it wasn't being portrayed.
No, they didn't really do it. It's just like she has one or two events she has to go to, but she's not like shuffling them. They usually have the super organizational person.
Yeah.
And that's not Queen Latifah. So I find it unusual because she doesn't fit an archetype. And maybe she just like had it changed when she was on set and they were like, well, Queen Latifah is not going to play that type
I think
of person.
She,
I don't know.
I think she was supposed to come off as the strong friend. So the struggling friend that has it all. Does that make sense? Like, it's a facade. Like, I think she was doing that, but she also was
that's
like,
her friend, right? Like, the new Oprah, as they put it at the beginning
of
the movie.
I guess you could see that. It's hard
Queen Latifah does not have it all in this movie.
She does.
Like,
I'm saying she's faking it. Like, everything she's hiding, it's all a facade with Sasha.
She's just not talking about struggling.
Yeah, but she wants to be, but she's like the protector, so she's supposed to show that tough side in a way.
Maybe that's it. She's the protector.
She's
the
protector of the group, but also it's
but Lisa
still
kind of fills that role a little bit too,
sort of. But I think Lisa was meant to be the
and Dina physically is the
Dina's
protector.
Definitely. We all know what Dina is, but like Lisa's supposed to be the motherly type. She was supposed to be the agenda person. I felt like, but a lot of the characters weren't what we would think. You know, like I think,
and I'm not saying it's bad. Like
I don't think so either.
I don't need it to boil down to archetypes. I find it unusual that your star of the movie
and
is,
you
like, is,
have
not,
this, like,
is not well defined. Yeah. It's not a problem in this movie because it is an ensemble at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I actually agree with you on it. I don't even think it's a bad thing to say that because really, like, she was a good character. It's just you wish for a little bit more, you know? Like, it would have been nice to see her actually be broke, you know? And then you kind of go through some stuff where actually really be thinking
about...
Yeah,
we just see that the blog is struggling, like,
and
the advertiser
she got
to
her car
out.
Towed in the beginning, but they the friends don't see that, you know? We as viewers see it, and so...
I guess they're just focusing on she's struggling, right?
That's, I guess.
It's not really an archetype, but she's struggling for sure.
Yeah.
It should be noted, too, Tracy Oliver wrote this, so she helped write The Blackening and produce The Blackening. She was the one that made off of the sketch, so that's the connection to The Blackening, so...
Oh my gosh, which is that's interesting to see, and that came from this movie too, so I'm curious. Okay.
All right, well, let's get into the synopsis.
Yes,
so
sir.
Right, Ryan Pierce, who's been labeled the next Oprah, invites her friends from college on a trip to New Orleans where they will go to a music festival. Ryan will be the keynote speaker while seeking a spokesmanship deal with her husband, Stuart. Her friends make up the Flossy Posse. Sasha, former journalist of Time, now runs a gossip blog site that is about to implode. Lisa, a nurse and mother, has not gone on a date in years. And Dina, a partier who's been fired from her job after hurling objects at coworkers for eating her lunch. I love that. They immediately establish, like, she's fired and she just does not accept that she's fired and ignores the boss. She because does what she wants.
In her mind, he ate her lunch and he did wrong. So, dude, that part where she's chasing out after him with that jewelry.
And then she leans in and she's just like, snitches get stitches, snitches on her way out.
And he's got, she messed him up. He's got a big old knot on his head. He's got ice pack on his head. Like, oh, good Lord. Good Lord. Dina's hilarious.
Lisa's kind of shuffling her feet, heading out the door, and she's like yelling at her, like, you're not going to go in your scrubs. I worked in retirement homes forever.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that they're not covering in the movie, and this is where you can tell the writer hasn't probably done this sort of work, is like, you get your scrubs off immediately because they're going to be disgusting. Yeah. Dude. Like, you just, you may not see it, but you but understand whoever you're taking care of, like, you're going to get your kids sick if you're wearing your scrubs.
Like, and you're wearing scrubs. You're about to go on vacation. You're wearing scrubs out of all things. The mom was even like, it's time to get out. So everybody wants a Dina friend. I've had those friends. I still do. I always hate saying stuff like this because a lot of people don't know, like, I'm black or whatever, or and quarter white. I have all kinds of stuff. Dina is that black female friend that you want, but you cannot take them everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't take them everywhere because guess what? Chances are you're going to be embarrassed. They don't give a shit. You're still going to get what you want. You might even get the parking space you want because that person is going to let them know, you know?
Yeah. So I had a white male version of this friend. This person. Okay. And he is mellowed out because he's got kids. His name was Gravy. And Gravy was like, any situation you were in, he was the crazy one that would like get stuff done and super charismatic, but also like bit of a loose cannon.
Yeah. Yeah. Because sometimes you're like, all right. But they were the friend that, like, if you're hanging out and someone comes up and thinks they're crazy and you're like, oh no, you don't want to do that. And they're like, no, I'm crazy. And I'm like, well, this is crazy. Let me introduce you to Dina.
No, Dina is great. She's just throwing a million miles an hour.
Every time. And here's the thing. I'm a Dina. I'm that one that we're on vacation. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do all these things and let's party and come on, let's go adventure. I want to do fun stuff. And everybody always does this. They did it with Sex and the City. You will find your character here. You will be like, yeah, I'm definitely a this person. Yep, I'm definitely a Lisa. Like,
yeah, I already said I'm the Lisa for sure. Which, like, yeah.
Seems like that explains why him and I get along. Lisa and Dina are kind of like the two friends out of their group. And then, like.
And I wouldn't have thought about it before I watched this, but, like, Jada Pinkett Smith is perfect for this. Because, like, I'm not going to talk about the slap again. But, okay, let's talk about the slap for a second.
Let's do it.
So, like, I would have handled that the same way that Jada Pinkett Smith handled that. Which was, like, scowl when the joke happened. But then just, like, looked on in horror when all of that played out.
But in that moment, if it was Dina, a little side smirk, like a...
Yeah.
Nice job,
not to jump ahead in the plot, but the fact that, like, Dina and Lisa have this kind of push and pull, and they're the maddest at each other, but they're very clearly best friends.
That's what I was saying, like...
Yeah, like, that makes sense to me, because that kind of dynamic, that is what happens. When you get your craziest friend in a group, they're always the biggest friend with the introvert.
Exactly.
And I think it's because, like, there is this thing where the big personality needs room to be a big personality, but also they need somebody who's quiet, because, like, a little bit in the back of their mind, they kind of aspire to, like, not be as big. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost a facade that they put on sometimes. And, like, the quiet person, I think there's, like, a little bit of, like, I wish I was the more outgoing person, you know?
I hear you. And honestly, I see that because I do that with people. I do that with my own self, where I'm a big personality. I'm not saying that, like, you know, oh my God, I'm awesome. What I'm saying is like, I like to talk. I like to talk to people. I know who I am. And so a lot of my friends are introverts. Sometimes.
Where I identify with Lisa totally in this, because we're making her out to be an introvert, but she's not really. It's just like the spot she's in her life.
She's not.
That's where I like really, really identify with that character, because that's how I am now that I'm older, is like my younger friends or like my crazier friends.
Yeah,
like I am the quieter one in that group, but I am still a big personality and I realize it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
If I go to a bar with my wife, I will be talking to every person in that bar while she's
having a good time. And that was the one thing with Lisa, that she wasn't, it wasn't that, well, she wasn't not wanting to have fun, but she also was comfortable where she was at. She was comfortable.
There's also this, and they don't get totally into it, but it does exist when you're a parent and you get around that age, is like, there's this underlining fear that something's going to happen. And you're really worried about introducing any kind of chaos to your life because you're trying to be stable for your kids.
Yeah.
And she like fits that to a T, because they keep talking about the crazy stuff she did when she was younger.
All of it. Yeah.
And you start to see glimpses of it later, you know?
Yeah. The zip line part.
we'll get to that.
Yeah.
That deserves its own discussion.
It really does. But yeah, no, I totally get that. Like, and like I said, you can pick characters. I kind of see what you mean now, like even with the Sasha character, but there's so much more they could have did where it could have been a little bit longer, where they could have done a Lisa, Dina kind of friendship. We're not separating them, but kind of seeing how they grow, because clearly they live in like the same city or something, because Dina's showing up.
I think they're all in the same city, right?
Are they?
I think they are, though. I mean, they don't expressly say it.
Yeah, I guess they don't, huh?
But I feel like,
man, how y'all gonna live in the same city and not see each other?
I mean, I don't know what city they're in. I'm guessing it's probably like LA or something like that.
It wasn't really established, I guess. I guess you're right. I guess they were all in the same city, but it didn't,
because they all meet at the airport together to go to New Orleans.
Oh my gosh, that does make sense. Yeah, but I thought they all, oh my gosh, my brain. Because I'm like, oh, they flew in and then they all met up at another airport and now they're all meeting up. But that makes sense.
Yeah, they meet up at that airport.
Oh, that is so dumb. I just got mad.
Because like Dina is like, well, no, but I will say, because you're just a little too young for this, but it's going to start happening. Well, it might be a little bit
different. I'm kind of getting there now.
I was going to say, it might be a little bit different because like you don't have people you've known for years, like in the city you live in. But like, this is where I'm at now, where it's like, I have so many friends in the city and like people that like, in your 20s, I think your friends are the most important that they'll ever be in their life. Mm-hmm. You're out of your parents' house and you're like trying to find your way in the world.
Absolutely.
And you start to make this family with your friends. And it's not that those friendships dissolve. It's just like everybody gets kids, or you like get bogged down in your career or whatever you're doing. And so you start to like go apart a little bit. And it's not that you love them any less. You're way more confident when you run into them, in the sense of like, you know, you're not going to just stop being friends with them because you're not hanging out with them every day. It becomes less frequent. So I do think when you're like in your 40s or 50s, this is a very real thing that happens, which is like, you will be in the city with your friends and like, you just don't get to hang out with them unless you make a date to hang out with them. And it has to be something that everybody can plan
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. I'm seeing, I'm getting that like right now. So I'm going to be 33 this month. And one thing I'm learning is, one is being alone. That is hard, because I've had people around me my whole life. I've lived with people my whole life. I'm getting there where, honestly, I have a lot of friends from years that I still talk to. I mean, I just messaged one of my friends because they got married on Halloween and I'm like, happy anniversary. I don't talk to them every day, but we still consider each other family.
Yeah.
And so those are the kind of people I want to stick around me. I've gone through so much heartbreak and friendships over the last few years that I am comfortable with having 2-3 friends. Back then, abso-freaking-lutely, I was like, I knew everybody. And when you live in Wyoming, especially a small town, you get this like sense that you're popular in a way, and you don't even know it, but because I was
big fish, little pond.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how I feel in Helena.
Yeah. You know, and like, and the big, right. And the biggest thing is being here, or mostly Cody, not here. There's a little more diversity here, but out in Wyoming, I was the only Black, gay, Jewish. People were attracted to that. And then I was fun and funny and I would always have your back. And then people like to see me fight too. It was a whole thing. But I do see what you mean, because I'm like, I don't want 10-15 friends.
Yeah, it's too much. It's not that I don't want the friends and they didn't stop being friends.
Right,
it's
just exactly.
Like, you get older, it's harder to hang out all the time. Whereas like when you're in your 20s,
yeah,
it's like every day, right?
It really is. And I'll rephrase it. I don't not want that. I don't need it. You know,
yeah.
Like I can have a couple, you know, however many friends and we don't have to talk or whatever. I'm friends with a lot of people and I love my friends and everything, but it really is growing apart, and people hear growing apart as like a bad thing because sometimes it can extend, it can turn into something different, and then someone's like, you just didn't talk to me, and it's like, well, we grew apart, but like we grew,
that's a younger thing too.
Yeah, and it's like we grew
when you get older. So I used to like profusely apologize to some of my friends because I would hang out with them every day, I lived with them, and so, and then I got a family and I couldn't do that, but then I discovered at a certain point my friend Gravy, who I was just talking about, who will always remain one of my greatest friends. Like, we don't talk that often.
Right.
We see each other every couple of years at this point. But when we see each other, it's literally like no time has passed. We fall into familiar rhythms. We understand each other. We catch up on our lives. And like, it's all copacetic, you know?
Right.
I think that's like kind of the key to this movie. The other thing is like, you get these little grudges over the years that you kind of have to like bury the axe.
Right.
We'll get into that as get into the plot, you know? But I do think it understands the dynamic between older friends, and that's what I really appreciate about this movie. Is
I like that.
It really got it.
Yeah.
After arriving in New Orleans, Sasha is offered photos of Stuart kissing an influencer. Sasha doesn't want to tell her, and Lisa makes him agree to wait until they get back to the hotel. But Dina blurts it out. Ryan tells them that she knows it, and they're going to couples therapy at the hotel bar. They see Stuart, and Dina breaks a wine bottle and threatens Stuart and his aunt with it. Sasha decides to check into another hotel, making Stuart stay by himself. I understand you need that Stuart character. I did not appreciate that they put Mike Coulter in that role because I love Mike Coulter and I'm just like, oh, he's such a jerk the entire time.
The husband, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I do too. And he is a jerk because he did
Luke Cage.
Yes.
That's how I know
him. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Oh my gosh.
Love Mike Coulter. And that dude is like cut from granite. He doesn't get to showcase it in this movie, but he's a really, really funny dude. And he's also really good. Stern, yeah.
You know.
And so they definitely lean into that part of it. And he does great in it, so don't get me wrong. But I was just like bummed out that I couldn't root for Mike Coulter the entire
movie. They said, sir, would you like to press charges? I mean, if it's the hotel's policy. Like...
He wants Dina in like, cuffs away
he
from
does.
Him.
Oh my gosh, when she breaks that bottle... comes out of nowhere. Dude, are you freaking Gala's night right now?
It's also the way, and this is like a Tiffany Haddish thing, like she nails it because you see her track it in her eyes and you know that she's seeing him before like you even see what's going on. And then in one fluid motion, she like goes about 20 yards to him, manages to grab a wine bottle, like
on
an expensive wine bottle, and smash it and point it right at him. Like one fluid motion, dude. It's amazing.
Dina
it's so good physically.
Is not messing around. And it's funny. I've been a Dina and I've been the person that's looking at Dina. And you know what they mean when they're like, when they see it and it's hard because those friends, and like I said, I've been there, when you lock on a target and you're like, it's game on.
Yeah.
We're going. She locks on. It's like, bing, bing, bing. She gets it.
To make the comparison to the Blackening,
yes.
She is a much more aggro version of Dwayne, right?
Yes. Like, yes.
Yeah. But they're very much the same archetype, but delivered in a very different way. Because I can't see Dwayne doing that.
Yes.
But, like, but they're cut from the same cloth.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's awesome. Like, I love my friends like that, but man, is it hard to not let them go over there because you want to see it. As much as you're like, no, 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 you're like, I mean, what are you going to say?
Everything in that is so great. And you get how everybody handles it, right? Like Sasha gets the thing, but doesn't want to deliver it.
Oh, yeah.
And you understand it's because she's got this strained relationship. And I don't think we really know why at the beginning. We find out later why.
We do.
Lisa wants to just... put it off until it's an appropriate time, which is very responsible. It's like, yes, we're going to tell her, but let's wait till we go to the hotel where it's not public.
What did you think of her her like calling Stewart out. I'm very disappointed. Very disappointed.
But first she like compliments Mrs. Ant or yeah. whatever.
Oh, that's right. She's like, hi.
Because she didn't do anything, you know, dude. But yeah. she got a broken wine bottle up at her neck.
Yeah, like what the heck? And then like Lisa's just, you know, that mother, she's kind of, I don't always say motherly type. She's just being very strategic and like calm. And so she's just like, oh my gosh, it's very nice to meet you. And then she's like, Stewart, very disappointed. Very disappointed.
It's a mother type. It's a very mother type. You're right. Yeah, yeah. That's a mothering move.
She didn't cuss him out or anything, but like I almost was like, damn, I actually would have rather Dina cuss me out than her, because I'm like, oh, disappointment.
No, Dina's scary, dude.
Dina is scary. I guess she did break the bottle.
They get to a seedy motel and everything is booked out at the festival. An old man tries to get into the room since it's usually occupied by a prostitute. After pressing his naked body on the window, they mace him. Then they head to the festival and run into a musician friend, Julian. They get more drinks and zip line together. Ryan and Julian have a connection, but it breaks off and he gives them a ride back. He gives them his suite after realizing where they're staying. Lisa invites a young man back, but is intimidated by his size. Okay, there's a lot to break down in here. First off, the room. It's so trashed. The only thing that doesn't quite work, but I understand why they did it, because they have to like run cameras and lighting rigs yeah. and stuff in the room, is like the room is too big for the crap hole that they're showing.
Yeah, right? It is awful. And then here comes this guy at the door knocking, and you're just like, wait, who could this be? And I thought it was gonna be like another friend or something. And then this guy comes out and
they have to open the door because the peephole's all cloudy.
It's all clogged up. Dude, yeah.
Hotels like that, they're old. Mm-mm. And I say hotel, that was definitely a motel. That was right? a motel. Like, we don't see the exterior, no. but it has to be a motel. Peepholes are always like that in motels, like the shadiest places. I swear somebody just goes and smudges all the things so they can rob somebody.
Yeah. Well, and it was funny when he walked in, and then they're like, he's like, is Shelly here? And they're like, no, not Shelly. He goes, I got $5. She said, oh, we're staying at a place that $5 hooker stand? $5. She gives me $3 change. Not the change.
I think that the change is a lie. I think that dude was he was trying to negotiate
Ain't no hoe around here sleeping with somebody for $5. And then
like they make some joke about like Dina getting the offer, but then he's like, not dressed like that.
Yes, not dressed like that. That was the fact that they call her out. They're like, listen, a dude that wanted to sleep with a $5 hooker wouldn't even sleep with you. You really think you're looking that good? Oh, and the window part. We won't get into it, but let me say.
He presses his naked body against it. It's like, it's so funny, man.
Dina's like, yeah.
But I love that she opens the door and just sprays me. And that's one of those things where it's like so unrealistic, but funny, because like I've been where pepper spray was sprayed and that just hangs in the air for hours. And like
it does.
Even the person who sprays it winds up with red eyes, you know?
Yeah.
But it's really funny to just see the shh and the guy running back.
Running back. Yeah. Every time I see pepper spray movies, I'm like, that is a lie. Everybody would have been
and then the zip line thing is amazing. So they establish earlier, you see this guy screaming going across the zip line, and they're like, oh, that's some white boy stuff.
Yeah.
But then like they get more and more drinks, and then they're going along the zip line, and they're all a little hesitant to do it. And then Lisa goes to do it and stops in the middle, and she had to go to the bathroom before she goes. And I know what's coming, but it was so funny, dude. It's basically a fire hose coming out.
Yeah, it is awful. And I was like, at one point, I was like,
crowd underneath.
Yeah, and people are screaming. Like, dude, the screaming too was what was getting me, because I'm like, why are you guys standing there? Get the heck out of the way.
That's the thing. But then just in case like you were wondering why didn't they step a couple feet to the left or right, it's just spraying like pea soup out of Reagan and the Exorcist.
So and then it doesn't help, so this is where I turn into Lisa, because I'd definitely be like, you guys, I'm not doing it. And then it just kind of comes out. Dina, however, so Lisa, the reason she even had to pee, so she tells them right before she gets on the zip line, I have to pee, guys. And Lisa goes and she gets stuck. And that's when it comes out. So Dina is like, all right, girl, I'm gonna push you. So Dina gets on the zip line and pushes her. And because Dina is, again, she's the party, the life, whatever. And then she's also a big personality. And she's like, hey, Lisa, I want to do it too. And she just pees.
Even more than Lisa. I love when Lisa's going, though. And they're like, damn, how many drinks does she have? Okay. Didn't know if I would have a belly laugh. I like belly laughed at that, yeah. And then the laughs just kept coming it after that. But the zip line thing like utterly killed me. That is like so funny.
Oh man,
that is an all timer moment. And then when they go back to the room, Lisa's with that younger dude and basically has a body part that's the size of a baby's arm. I think
pretty much is what they said. And Lisa, I don't think they've quite got to where they're going to sleep together yet.
Because it's after the zip line thing, because she's super messed up. And she goes back to the room, but yeah, she doesn't sleep with him.
Until
but
then the next
morning, they're talking, and Dina's saying, like, you cut a cantaloupe in half and, like, push a hole in it. Oh, grapefruit, yeah, yes.
I always tell people, have you ever heard of the grapefruit? You know what to do.
So we're not going to get into the details on that. Just imagine, because I heard him start to mention that before she shows it with the
before
banana.
Before she shows it? Yes! And you're like, holy crap. Let me tell you something.
I immediately knew this was a bad idea because I'm like, there's no way Dean has actually done this because like the dude would scream because it's citric acid, man.
It is.
Like, I thought of this right away when I was watching it, so I was not surprised later that it doesn't go so well.
But. Yeah, my favorite though is when she goes, one time I did it with the pineapple, almost killed me. Oh, great.
Ryan and Stewart have a cooking show at the festival. Simone, the influencer, volunteers to go up on stage. The Flossy Posse force their way up on stage between Stewart and Simone. An investor is impressed with the show. Afterwards, Dina buys some 200-year-old absinthe and is warned to take it easy with it because they could hallucinate. She spikes all their drinks. They go to another club where Ryan and Stewart meet with the investor but start tripping out. Dina, Sasha, and Lisa try to rescue Ryan by taking her to yet another club away from the investor. I love the introduction of the absinthe. This was like a thing when I was younger. It was like legend that like absinthe would make you trip. Mm-hmm. And then I think when I was like 25 or something, like it was illegal in the United States for a long time.
Yeah. Is it still?
No, it's not anymore. Okay. But what happened was I had a friend who went to Europe and brought back absinthe. And he's like, yeah, you don't actually hallucinate. And then I'd like tasted it and I was like, oh, it's like licorice. But I found out it's because they used to make it through wormwood.
Yeah.
And it had like arsenic in it. So it's kind of like acid in that way where like if you get some arsenic in your bloodstream, you're going to hallucinate, right? So
I actually had the actual absinthe. This it was good. I didn't hallucinate hard. Right.
This was the touch that I appreciated they put in because when I started talking about absinthe, I was like, I know where they're going. Come on. And then when he said 200 years old, I'm like, oh, legit. Because when they made it back then, it was tainted. And so that's what happened. And so people would hallucinate on it. So it's so funny. He's telling like just a little bit, like this is enough for 5 years. And she's like, 5 months.
God. Yeah. And don't need much. And Dina just dumps. She just fills these girls with drinks. This is probably, if anything was a belly laugh for me, it was this part. Just because like, if you can do a hallucinogen part where people are actually being funny and it does look like, you know, it's being funny, I could deal with that. And that was hilarious. They're so messed up. What's her name that played in Grey's Anatomy?
Kate Bush.
Yes. She was one of my favorites because she is one of the white girlfriends that I love. She wants to be a part of everything. And
but like,
she wants to be like,
so inappropriate.
It's so inappropriate, but it's so
because
good.
You can tell it's like that perfect line where it's like, when you hang out with somebody, you will start to get jargon, right?
Exactly.
But like, the way you could tell with her is the way that Ryan talks is not the way that she talks.
Exactly.
Right? Like she's like pulling at slang. Like I think she mentions like, don't pull out any words you like looked up on Urban Dictionary, you know, she's doing
exactly.
The entire time.
Like, don't do any of that. And she's all like, okay, girl. Like you're like, oh my God, stop. But she's also like one of those friends that it doesn't really establish that her and Ryan are friends, but it kind of feels like
they're friendly. She definitely wants to be her friend.
She definitely does.
Pretty much one way.
I really is. But she was one of my freaking favorites just because those are my kind of white friends that I'm like, oh, you want to be a part. And I really want you to, girl, come in, you know, and come enjoy. And like, sometimes even when they're even trying, I'm like, oh, that's cute. And so watching that character, I really liked it because she is trying to be a part of it and she is trying to learn, and but she's doing it in the wrong way.
Yeah. It's like that conversation in Get Out where it's that benign racism, right? Where it's like, I'm going to talk to you on your level so that I could be a part of you. It's like no,
what's up,
dude?
Brother? How you doing? And you're like,
you see what she's saying in that body and you're like, no.
Yeah. And that's where I'm like, I can't be mad at, you know, that character, but it's also like, dang girl, don't try so hard. She's like, don't, you know, any quote.
And I will say, like, I had a white friend from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
He talked like that. Not like she does, but like would say this, the kind of stuff that she says.
Yeah.
But it never tracked as like, you shouldn't be saying that, because like he very clearly was that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was how he grew up talking. So you can like sense it.
You can relate and know.
But you can always sense when people are throwing on words to throw on words. It always sounds fake. And
it doesn't
have to just be with that. It can be like trying to be intellectual or trying to talk down to somebody, whatever, like
something they think they know. Okay, so we'll go back to the funny, but the absent part. Let me tell you all, everyone, the club scene is probably one of my favorites. One is, dude, she drank that candle and she goes, oh, is that verbena? They are so messed up on absinthe that they are just, she's drinking the candle. Sasha, her date, the lamp.
Yeah. Okay. This is one of those things where it's like, it's great for a comedy, would never happen in real life.
No.
Like
no.
What people don't understand about hallucinogens is like, what it does is it subtly changes the things around you, right? So like, I think Midsommar is one of the few representations of hallucinogens I've seen where it's like very accurate, where it's like stuff goes and kind of waves.
Yeah
But like, you don't make a lamp into a human being that walks and talks to you
and tells them to pay for the bill.
Yeah, that's not a thing that happens. But I do love, and it's once again like completely unrealistic, but it's very funny when they go to rescue their friend from that meeting.
Yeah,
that she leaves the lamp to distract them, and then and then her friend, who is also tripping out, is like, says something like, oh, so come sit down,
come
like
sit to down. The lamp. Come. She's like, my date will pay for this. Or she hands him the shoe also. She's like, put it on my card.
That's right. She hands the shoe.
And then there's the part where Ryan just, he goes, I don't know, Ryan must have taken that new allergy medicine. And she starts beating her chest. She's like, it goes crazy. I started dying laughing because I'm like, these girls are crazy. Or the part where they are literally like, okay, we have to figure out how we're going to go over to Ryan. What's the plan B? And Stuart's like, plan B? What's plan B? And they turn around. He's like, what are you guys doing here?
Or, yeah, because they're saying far away. And it's like, it's at best 100 yards, right? Like,
I think they were at the table the whole time.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is it turns out they're only like 5 feet away from it. Yeah. But they thought they were so far away.
Right.
And then they have that part where Lisa is hallucinating being with the young guy. And she's like licking a column.
Ryan seeing Simone everywhere and cussing out the waitress, and the waitress's face the whole time is like, she's like, oh yeah, you want to sleep with my husband?
Simone and her three friends are at the club and they have a dance off with the Flossy Posse. It escalates into a fight. They flee and see Julian, who takes them back to the hotel. Again, Ryan and Julian flirt, but nothing comes of it. Meanwhile, Lisa invites the young man back to her room again. I don't have much to say about the club thing. It is kind of, you've seen a version of the scene over and over again.
Yeah.
Somehow they do a dance off where they all synchronize and dance
the
moves, right?
Yeah.
But like the part with the guy where basically Lisa's taking the guy back to her room, and then she like comes back and grabs a grapefruit, grabs a second grapefruit. And then like he just starts screaming because it hurts. I'm going to tell you, when you go to put on that grapefruit, if you're stupid enough to let that happen, it's going to hurt immediately when you go to put it on.
Oh, just, I'm like shaking right now.
I know. It's
my
like,
leg. Calm down, leg. Calm down, leg.
I'm trying to be classy enough to get this on the radio.
We're both in here like right now. We're both in here like, okay, yeah, the grapefruit. I can't even imagine what that.
I wonder how many people have been hurt. Young people watching this movie.
And here's the thing. I guarantee if you didn't watch this whole part and you just saw the grapefruit part, half of you tried this and didn't see the end result. Okay. I tried to do a pineapple. That nearly killed me.
That was the warning that you should not do this.
Oh, please don't stick anything there, you know?
Ryan and Stewart are made a massive offer from the investor. The Flossy Posse go out to Julian's performance at the House of Blues to celebrate. Simone appears and tells Sasha that she's pregnant with Stewart's child and offers her story. Simone tells Ryan, who confronts Stewart, but he convinces her not to let their images be tarnished and tells her that they'll buy her off and have her sign an NDA. One thing I thought of immediately is, like, the NDA is not as big of a deal as people think it is.
It's
like,
really not.
Because, and I've said this on an earlier episode, if you go way back, but I actually violated an NDA
with
Disney. Did I ever tell you about this? Yes,
we talked about this, and I was like, I mean,
yeah, go back to the episode to listen. Oh, dude, I talked about it all over the podcast. They don't care.
They don't. Unless you're giving out, like,
if you're like, if you're like in a Marvel movie, mm-hmm. they care. If you're on Jimmy Kimmel show, they're not going to care. I'm like,
oh, it leaked? Oh, okay, well.
Yeah, and this is the same kind of thing. It's like the influencer, I got to imagine she's going to get more press off of putting this out there, and that's good for her. So at the end of the day, even if she signed an NDA, I don't remember if she actually signed it or not, but if she did sign it, she's going to make more money than probably violating that agreement.
Yeah, and if anything, I mean, I'm sure NDAs, though, that's their own clause, I would feel like. So anything that they do break, I feel like it's
it just depends on the terms
right,
of it, right?
So what did they put in there that says, and they could have been like, we're going to buy you off on this. And she probably never even signed it. She probably just went, you know what? No, I can make more and more of a scandal doing this. People make more off of a scandal, you know?
I got to say, this movie does a good trick of making me really care about the characters and enjoy it. Whereas like, I find their jobs horrible. Like,
yes,
the gossip website I find horrible, which it kind of falls on that thing. Because
it's one of those gossip websites you just randomly find and it really has no facts to it.
Yeah.
It's just there. It's a blog and it's like, or a vlog with a V.
Right.
But
your lead is an influencer, which like, I hate that kind of stuff.
I did too.
I hate it, but I'm also like, I genuinely care about her. So
and here's
like,
the thing. If she was going to be an influencer and it was like this thing where she was being Brooke, I kind of didn't want to see her look so rich, you know, in that way. Like, she had like a nice apartment. It was all these things.
Dude, they're all doing better than they should, except for maybe Lisa, who's living with her mother, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Was she live with her mom or did she get a settlement?
Yeah, they have a whole thing where Dina's insulting her for living with her mom later on when they have their falling out. You better
shave. We're going to be making tamales and
Did you ever think that Sasha dropped the dime on Ryan? Like, I never
did.
At any point, except for when she's apologizing on the vlog. And then I was like, oh, she did it? And then like, no, that weirded me out when she's like apologizing.
Yeah. And for me, have you ever been where you didn't do something, but because you're being accused of it, you almost felt like you did? I got that feeling for Sasha.
Because you get that anxiety.
Right. And then you're like,
and you realize that everything looks like you did.
Right. Did I accidentally say something to someone?
I could see in that situation where people might think that you did it because like you had access to the photos.
Right. And she went and talked to Simone on the side.
Yeah. She would not have told any of her friends about those photos if she's going to dump it on another site. That would have implicated her immediately.
Right. I mean, and I think she went and told him and then they were in the hotel room, which also that did give like Stewart's narcissistic behavior where he literally was all about him. He wanted fame and fortune. He wasn't in love.
And he's appealing to her by saying like, right, don't tarnish your image.
The hardest thing is it's hard to feel bad for Ryan because she is in this and it is seeming like she's in love with him, but she also has to get a check. And because
she should have broke up with him.
Right.
If not the philandering thing, maybe, I don't know, like maybe the first time that she caught up, it was clearly a pattern that was happening at a certain point. You're like, you have to say no.
And
clearly he knew how to manipulate her.
He did. And
so I'm not trying to like blame her.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, narcissists are abusive people and they make your brain think other things because that's how they portray you in their mind, if that makes sense. So to them, if you're kind of doing better and everything else, their success is being pushed on the background. And so because she is kind of that forefront and being like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm trying to do and influence. It's hard because
she's tied up her self-worth with his self-worth.
Exactly.
Right?
And his success is her success. Her success is his. And it's like, no, that's not how this is going. You're going out and you're working and you're pushing and you're you're doing the best you can. Where is he at? We just like Stuart and you. And it was funny because some of the interviews, it was more like you only saw him in like one or two interviews.
He's always off to the side. He's always off like, to the side. What is going on? Like yeah, at any given point.
But then he wants a check and wants to be popular. And it's like, no, dude. And I felt like that was a very good.
He was an ex-football player coasting off of his image. Right?
Exactly.
He wasn't doing anything. He wasn't contributing anything.
Sorry, I try to make sense out of that. And I was like, nope, I lost it.
There's a reason why she's the keynote speaker and he's not.
He isn't. And like, I never thought that Sasha was going to leak, but I didn't like that they made him a villain and it was good, but it was also like, it sucked because Ryan was dumb in a way. She was a smart woman, but she was also dumb when it came to her narcissistic behavior.
Yeah, it's, you know what it is? And if I have a criticism of the film, it didn't ruin the movie for me, but I feel in my bones, typically, I'm not the dude who's always like, edit this down. But like comedies, I feel like when you go past 90 minutes, a lot of the time you're pushing the premise that's often unbelievable to make a comedy.
Right.
And so you start to get diminished returns in some regards. And I would say the fact that you have to live with this thing with Ryan for so long, like when you get to about 90 minutes, when she does the heel turn again, you're like, come on. But if they'd had one less of those, i.e. cut out a half hour of that drama, I think it would have been way more palatable. And it's fine. Like, it's fine at the end.
I think they were really, and this could be me, because we didn't, like I said, there was not much to the film as far as like what they were trying to do. But I felt like that to me was a form of mental abuse in a way.
He's
definitely 100%. Trying to keep her around. That's what I'm saying. It was a very narcissistic move, and especially how he does it. And because I've been there where someone got her pregnant, he's like, yeah, but like, I still want to do this thing with you and I still love you. And we could always put the, it's like, dude, that's so mentally abusive.
At first it's, you know, I'm always going to stick around for you. I'm not going to stick around for her. Yeah. Later, then he's appealing to the career part of it because he realizes he can't get away with what he just did.
Yes, that's the, I'm going to divorce my wife, but we can still sleep together. No. What? No. Yeah. And he did that vice, like opposite though. He's like, I won't ever sleep with her. I won't ever do these things. Like, come on, dude. And then she comes down the elevator and they're all like, what? He got her pregnant and now you want to sit here and feel bad for him?
And that touches off all the fights. So Ryan is constantly lacing into Sasha about her being a gossip columnist, which I'm like, that's a mean thing to do over and over again, but I get it. I understand what you're saying about the journalism. But then you get the bombshell drop that like, apparently she was working on a website with her and then left to do this gig.
So
she left Sasha holding the bag. And then of course she's goes to the gossip thing because she's got to figure out a way to keep the doors open. You know, like that's a means to an end for her, which is why she would not betray her friend, because like, that's not who she is. That's exactly what she has to do.
And I think that's what was like the protector part with Sasha. Here's where I didn't think she did leak it, is because in the beginning, the boss or Sasha or whoever he was, she goes, well, I'm about to go hang out with Ryan Pierce and all that. And he goes, Ryan Pierce, is there anything on her? And she goes, absolutely not. Like, you could tell she still has that friendship. As much as that Sasha wanted to be mad at her, could have done her in and spoke bad about her, she never did. And then you hear, well, Ryan did this thing and was supposed to do it with Sasha and Sasha was ready for it. And Ryan was like, no, nah, I'm getting famous. Bye. It made Ryan look like a bad character. And I actually felt for Sasha in that moment because it was like, damn, you dropped everything.
Yeah. I think if you step back and look at it, it's understandable. I think a good friend would step aside and be like, go ahead. You do have to make that right. And it was very clear that Ryan didn't think about the position she left Sasha in. And so that should have been left right. The push and pull you see between them.
Exactly.
And then with Dina, it's so funny because she's yelling at Lisa for being with the younger man, which I didn't even think about. But it's like, yeah, that is kind of like a crazy move if you think about it. Like,
yeah.
And even Dina doesn't cross that line.
Yeah.
Because I think the dude is supposed to be 18, but it's like, that guy's like,
was he supposed to be 18?
I think so, but he's clearly,
oh my God.
He's clearly like in his 30s.
He
clearly
is. He was older. I was getting like, if they were trying to do young, I was like 21 to like,
maybe he was 25. I guess he was drinking. He had to be like,
he was drinking, but I was also like, I mean, but I don't know. These parties and movies and events, you know, some of these.
It's hard to say. It's also hard to say with Hollywood because like, and somebody who's supposed to be 16 or 17 is often 23 in movies.
Yeah, and then they throw in these like,
really hard to gauge.
Sexual innuendos or scenes, and you're like, not supposed to look at it as an adult. You're supposed to look orgasm to Chyna. And then you're like, but I can't look at it like that because it just all seems bad. It just all looks bad. That's why I'm like, I don't like when they put high school stuff, like sexual things, into shows or movies, because I'm like, what are you guys doing here?
I think it's why they intentionally cast people that are way older too, though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they're easier to work with on set, and like the union rules are different for like,
and then we wonder what we got. No, I'm joking. Then we wonder why we got minds going in places they don't need to be.
Right. But I think they do that so that the audience can just sort of forget about the fact that it's supposed to be high schoolers if you're telling a high school tale.
Fair enough. I think
that's why they did it.
You know, we all watched
Euphoria. I'm not making excuses for
it. I'm just joking.
I did watch
We all watched Euphoria. Yeah. But really, it was just funny. And the fight, man, Dina goes in, and then you get to see a hint of Lisa too, and her like back in the day, because Lisa gets in it and Lisa does not care.
Yeah.
My favorite part too is Dina. She's going off on both Ryan and Sasha. And like every time she goes to walk away, she's like, oh, here's your card. Don't worry. I spent all of your balance with your low ass balance, and gives it to her. Oh, let me give you your ID. I don't want you coming and calling the police on me. And
she comes back like 3 or 4
she
times.
She does.
But like she's clearly like robbed her entire purse.
I can't believe this. I hate y'all, but I love y'all at the same time. I hate y'all.
Dina and Lisa see each other at a cafe and make up. Sasha closes down her blog, apologizing for the lives she's hurt. Dina and Lisa reach out to her, and Sasha wants them to know she didn't leak Simone's story. Ryan gives her speech, intending to deny Simone's story. The Flossy Posse show up, and Ryan admits that Stuart had the affair. She then gives a rousing speech, which, like, I can't even remember what the speech is over, because I think I started to glaze over, and I'm just like, every comedy has that moment at the end where they like confess something, and then, you know, whatever they say, they could just go blah 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 blah, and then everybody's gonna stand up and cheer, you know. So like I just sort of tuned out, I didn't mean to,
it wasn't that I tuned her, I tuned her out because Stuart, and like when she's like, sit your down, and he gets embarrassed, you're just like, yeah, that's what you get. You don't really see that. It's a lot of movies where the character you can see in the background, and he's just a blur. It's not like they're shining in on him or anything. He took off, and then like he's kind of looking. It was perfect.
Ryan's agent tells her that the deal is still on for her and not Stuart. She agrees as long as Sasha can be her partner. They then go to a Mariah Carey show, and Ryan hooks up with Julian.
I like Julian because he was very respectful of her marriage.
Yeah.
He didn't know, and then like,
he clearly wanted to be with her and had a connection with her, but also he understood she's married, so I have to cool it.
So much going on. And I agree. I like the Julian character.
Although I will say, they have this whole thing where, you know, she keeps asking him, have you never settled down because you get so much booty and things like that? And he just keeps hinting that, like, he's waiting for the right person. And the way he's looking at her, it's clear it's her.
Yeah.
But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I know the movie's telling me that he's the right person for her, but if you're with a philanderer and then you're like getting with a touring musician, is this situation really getting better? So now I will leave this football player for a guy who goes around to places where people are constantly drunk and watching shows
and have very big fangirls where they are doing, I mean, we watched Dina and there's go off, who was it, was it P. Diddy? They did the
she gets
on stage.
Is that what he goes by now? It's just Diddy now, right?
Oh, it's just Diddy. Oh my gosh.
I've gone through every phase of it. I went through the Puff Daddy.
Yep. Then it was P. Diddy
to Diddy. And then I think it was Sean Combs, but I think he goes by Diddy when he performs. So.
I think you're right. I think he is a man of many different names.
It's because it's the least coast. It kind of
reminds me of me, but people just gave me my nickname. Shit. Oh my gosh. This was a fun movie. I watch this all the time. It's my nostalgia movie at times where I'm like, I just really want to watch something I don't have to pay attention to, but I know the parts. And so if it pops up, I'm like, oh, I'm ready to watch this part, you know?
Yeah. So Tracy Oliver was saying, I wanted to show Black women being carefree and having fun just like everyone else. I needed to show all aspects of Black lives. I love Moonlight and I love Hidden Figures, but I also want to see some people who are having fun and just showing female friends hanging out. And you definitely get that.
You do.
I feel like we've gotten a lot of these movies where it's like a group of women hang out and like go to do a thing. Mm-hmm. You don't really get to see black women do that very often. And she's right. Like, you get movies like Hidden Figures, which I have all kinds of problems with because it's always one of those white savior movies where, like, they're trying to break through and they're better than everybody. And nobody will listen. And then this one white guy goes, "Hey, guys, you should listen. She's really brilliant." And they're like, "Yes, white guy, we will solve racism." Like,
wait a minute. No. We solved it when they came in here trying to make us better. Yeah.
And that's what I liked about this was, like, you do have white characters come in and out, but they're, like, inconsequential.
Again, she...
Like, they're just...
They're the agent.
Just having a movie. I have really friends
like that, and I love my friends like that. And it's, to me, it's hard because I try not to think of it as a race thing. I really do think they want to fit in sometimes. But there are the ones that really are trying, and I'm like, okay, look, we all know you grew up in the suburbs living your best life. Let's pull it back, ring it in, and really get it in. And I'm not saying every white person is from the suburbs. That was me stereotyping. But I'm saying that's where...
Yeah, some are from trailer parks.
You know, that some happens. Are from mansions. Listen, there's black trailer people, you know, just say. No, and I'm not ever trying to make this into a race thing. It's just sometimes I do like my white friends that like to... They want to be a part of the culture. And that's where I get mad because sometimes black people are like, we don't want them a part of the culture. But it's like, but I do in a way that if it's going to be influential for them... Now, listen, don't be going around saying the N-word because, listen, we ain't going to be doing all of that. But, like, me coming up to... Like I said, I said it real loud yesterday at Alex, but we worked together. And I'm like, Alex, we've already talked about this. You are black at heart, man. You are black and white. And it's very true. When I say stuff like that, it's not to be a race thing or anything. What I'm trying to say is you're more than welcome to feel comfortable around me because I feel comfortable around you. And I like that.
And I get that. But I always like...
He always does this roll eye. I'm like, I love it. Look at him turning all red. Well, I can't even do that.
I'll be honest, man. I love the acceptance of it. Like, that's super cool. And like, I appreciate that. But there's also a part of me that, like, remembers all the awful, just stupid things that I've done across my life. And so it's like, I've, like, had to, like, overcome that part of myself. Yeah. If that makes sense.
And not to
so
interrupt like, you, but hearing you say that, that's the kind of white friends that I want. Where they're like, look, I appreciate it. You know, there was this, but there's some things we've done.
Let me put it this way. Never want to feel comfortable saying the N-word.
Like, oh, yeah. No.
That's kind of what it comes to, because, like, I do feel like there is, like, a type of person who I think is this character we're talking about who wants to be accepted so bad that they're throwing out the jargon when it's not okay.
Exactly.
And to me, it's like I was raised to not think that that's okay. So, like, that is who I am at my core. It's like, I'm never going to do that, even if I get permission.
Exactly. Never. You get comfortable with what you get comfortable with. It's really fun. That's why right now, me and my friend, we talk about this all the time. We actually just got into a conversation about it. We won't go into detail. And she listens to this. Brandy, I know I'm saying your name and you know I'm talking about it. She and I, we talk about a lot of things, and it's really hard because people like to put her in a way of this weird stereotype, or like she'll say something and it's really what she's saying, but they put her in that category of she does this thing. And it's like, no, guys, she's expressing a certain thing. You're not hearing the words. And like, that's where I'm at with black and white people, Asian, all of that. We need to listen to the words and how we're saying it. There are racists. And I'm like, no, if anybody knows me, I am predominantly black, but I got a whole white family. My dad and mom got together. My grandma loves brothers. She will tell you that. She's like, all day white boys, I love brothers. That is my grandma. She is a white ginger. And she says brothers. To us, you can say that. Words are words. It's how you use them and how you phrase them. And then when you start to put them in a way of, it's a black thing, it's a white thing, it's an Asian thing, it gets hard. And then we start coming out with Urban Dictionary, Ebonics.
Yeah, which, you know. Urban Dictionionary is just a source of comedy for
really,
me.
It's
not anything more. I've never used it as a real reference for anything. It's stuff where you look up your name and it's always going to have some
little stank on it. And it's true. We just have a little extra stank on it. And I think when people are trying, again, the agent in there, she's like, okay, girl. you know, like,
yeah,
to be,
it's that, dude.
It's funny, but I'm also like, stop trying so hard.
That's what it is. That's you what know? It is. Like, you're this trying, is not you. If you yeah. actually were your legitimate self, you
it just
be
come
cringy.
Around us. Honestly,
she's cringy. That's
yeah,
what it is.
We want to invite you to the cookout, you know. Alex is coming to the cookout. But what we like is, like, want to feel comfortable. And I think right now with what we're going through, like, let's make each other comfortable. Let's stop freaking thinking one way or the other. And I really did enjoy The Agent. I hate saying it like that. And most of my friends would be like, oh my gosh, you know. And if I had a lot of Black friends, they would be like, well, why? I liked her because, yes, was she trying hard? Yeah. But was she trying hard to have fun and be a,
like,
part of it?
It feels like her heart's in the right place, right?
Right.
She's just handling it.
She just doesn't realize. She doesn't realize she's being, I won't say she's being racist. Let's say she's being a stereotype towards a race.
I mean, like, we already broke down at the beginning of this that most of the characters are archetypes anyway, right?
Right.
So, like, she's no different.
Yeah,
you know,
she's,
like, everybody's an archetype, yeah. except for maybe Queen Latifah's character is not really an
yeah.
archetype.
I was almost wanting.
I guess, like, she's more nuanced. Maybe it's because Queen Latifah is such a good actor.
That we
she,
just,
like,
she's
she
there,
blew past
you know?
The archetype of it and was like, no, I'm going to make this a real person.
I'm going to turn this
she's
into something.
She's probably the only one that feels legitimately real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I could see that. And, like,
because everybody else is heightened.
Yeah.
She's not really heightened. She doesn't do anything where I'm like, that would never happen.
Yeah, exactly. I could see that. And is it bad that I actually wanted The Agent to be kind of part of things? Not as much, but more.
No, because she's hilarious.
Because she's hilarious. Yeah, yeah, she's hilarious. And I feel like her and Dina would have gotten along because Dina would have been her type of.
Dude, I feel like Dina would have punched her at some point.
Yeah. Who is this girl? I don't know. It's hard to say, but, like, I will say this. We're trying to come together. One thing that you and I talked about is, like, you were like, yeah, I could do more of this type of movie because I could get your opinion on it.
You were mentioning, like, I was looking at your list of movies and you had, like, maybe two Black movies, which I think I went over it and I was like, okay, there's like four,
mm-hmm.
but that's not better. You know what I mean? Like, that's not very many.
He needs more Black movies, people.
But you were talking about how we did, like, this run of a bunch of Black movies since you went on it, but I've had this policy for the most part. Jeremiah and I used to butt heads sometimes over mm-hmm. movies, but most of the stuff that's on this show is either the guest picking or it'll be like a negotiation between me and the person on the other side of the
right.
mic. And so, like, I tend to, if it's just my choice, I tend to, like, go with classics that maybe people haven't seen and try and break them down,
mm-hmm.
or I do, like, little known movies. I'm kind of getting out of that a little bit, but this was, like, a big phase I was going in because I was trying to, like, discover a lot of different movies and why stuff is made. So it was kind of like, oh God, this is going to sound hokey when I say it, but it was kind of like my journey with like cinema is like, I want to be a better critic. And so,
heck yeah, man, I
so
think that's
like
awesome.
Part of it is like watching things that other people are talking about. But then the other thing is like watching the established classics. So I understand why Hollywood is built the way that it is.
Right.
That makes sense.
No, that does make sense.
But like with you, we do have common interest, like to say that, like you said that about Black film, but also like, I've been looking for an excuse to do Get Out forever. So
right.
like, I was excited to do that. And then when you were like, nope, I was like, yes, because I love Jordan Peele. He's one of my
yeah.
favorite directors. So it's not like I haven't been right there with you for some of these. Like The Blackening or Girls Trip is not ones I ever would have picked off the top of my head. But I'm super stoked to do them too because like I hadn't seen those movies. And it's
yeah.
like I want to watch as much as I can. And I dig that you have this perspective that I don't have. And by extension, I'm guessing a lot of the audience who's hung with me has not had these experiences either.
Right. Because
that's part of what I want the show to be is just to like cast this wide net and have people consider movies that maybe you haven't considered before. And I think
agree.
This is like really good. I don't think we've done a bad movie yet.
I don't think we
I
have.
I mean, Black Sheep is bad, but it's
yeah,
fun.
But it's funnily, funny bad.
Yeah.
No, and I guess when I said it too, it was really funny, mostly because I was thinking like, this is awesome because it does let us kind of get something out there. And this is a good way for any race to go and watch these movies and be like, oh my gosh, this is funny. It's hard because like Blackening and stuff like that, that is where we will say like Urban Dictionary, Bond, all that kicks in where white people and other races don't understand. So when they do watch it, like, okay, one guy we work with, I was like thinking like, he's like, I'm going to go watch The Blackening. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's funny. But I don't know if you're going to understand,
yeah.
you know, but yeah. also I don't want to pull people away from that because then I'm not sitting there influence black people either or white people to come together. And so I was like, check it out. Well, see what you think.
Okay. I'm going to let out a little kernel I haven't talked about with anybody. So we did Menace to Society on the show.
Yes.
And it was three people who did not have true context for that lifestyle talking about it. And I didn't say anything because my policy was very much like, let the guest pick the show. But inside I was like, this is kind of messed up because we're talking about this thing that very much became a stereotype in the 90s of like so many black films were about somebody on the street. Yeah.
Getting shot gangs.
And it's not that I don't think that it was a good movie because I did, but I also, there was like a part of me that's like, there's this experience that none of the three of us have. And so it felt a little gross talking about it because even though it's a black made film and, you know, it's cast with black actors and everything, I felt like our perspective was going to be skewed on it, like not in a correct way. And so that made me a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm super comfortable talking about all these movies with you because I know you're going to have some degree of experience with some of this stuff and understand what's real and what's not real and what's heightened. And I just think that like that nuance is good to have when you're talking about cinema.
I agree.
So I think this is like a good thing to like talk about a lot of these movies because like you have the experience, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know. Well, honestly,
obviously you're not living a boys to men scenario. No. Boys to men. Obviously,
Menace to Society. Yeah. But honestly, I did not know you did Menace to Society. It was the first time I had heard it yesterday when we were talking. Your feelings and everything are valid, mostly because I would think, and again, I don't take it the wrong way, but when you do hear three white guys doing a podcast on Menace to Society, well,
not three white guys, two white guys, but yeah.
Oh, was it? Oh, I thought you said there was a third. Oh,
well, but there was, but Jeremiah is Mexican American, so
just kidding.
Yeah,
no, it's he all might good. Have went, he might have went through some things, but I don't ever know. But like the biggest thing is like there's the Edward, and then there's Wiggas. You know, I got my Wigga friends. No, you
totally know
there's,
what you're talking
there's
about.
There's totally Wiggas, and then there's the other one,
and they're annoying.
Yeah.
They're super annoying.
You know, every once in a while, I got my one good friends like that. But you can never know what someone has went through. But living here, you know, two white guys, I could see that being somewhat of a sensitive topic. And like, honestly, I could see why it could be gross to you. Mostly because if I think about it.
It wasn't that the movie was gross. No, it was just like, I felt like with that particular movie, we did not have the experience necessary to
you can't
talk
relate.
About that movie.
You know, there's certain things you can't relate
like you
to.
Think you relate, but you're only relating to the story that's told over and over again.
Exactly.
And
I wonder
how much of that is the stereotype. And like the Hughes brothers did it, right? But like the Hughes brothers are also, they have this story and Hollywood's picking it for a reason.
Exactly. I don't know. It's hard because we're in the world right now where everything is so racist that it's hard for me to tell somebody to go watch a movie because I don't know what they're going to think. And it's like I said about the blackening and the person we work with. To me, it's hard because I do put them in that type of, they're not going to understand this movie because of how they're talking in there or how they're saying it. I don't know what they are going to understand and what they're not going to understand. And so that's where I go into even this comedy, the Girls Trip movie, where it's like, it's nice to watch these movies and then talk about it on this podcast because it does bring education to people in a way. And we're not educators. We're not teaching you anything.
I literally am an educator now, though.
Oh, you are. I'm not an educator.
But I educate on podcasts.
Yeah, so. But I don't, you know, and in a way, we're here to influence. If we're doing this podcast, we're influencing people to watch these movies to get an idea.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. And I want people to, like, get out of your comfort zone and watch movies that maybe you're not comfortable with because I think there's a lot to learn from these, whether it's something that the movie's directly addressing or something around the movie, right?
I'll be honest. For me, be uncomfortable to the point where I watched Rosemary's Baby and I knew what it was going to entail it all of. I knew it was going to be this. The only black person in that movie was the person that
the elevator guy.
Yeah. And he had a very short scene. But to me, I guess I wasn't sitting there going, oh my God, there needs to be more black people. One, it was for whatever time that was too.
But I did. I did say that because this is the stuff I look for in movies. Mm-hmm. Is like, it's not that I'm doing a count on minorities or something like that. It's just like, you see New York and you're like, that doesn't look like New York.
Right.
You know, and like I watched Girls Trip, for example, and I'm like, I guess that looks like New Orleans. Like from what I've seen of New Orleans and heard about New Orleans, it seems right.
The party and the way it was, but it was very diverse out there.
Now, I'm sure somebody from New Orleans is like, that's nothing like New Orleans.
Exactly. But like, trust me.
I don't know. I'm not from New Orleans.
I'm going to say, this is, you know, I don't really care. I knew the person, she was a good friend of mine, and she worked at this place, and they ended up filming a movie out there by Melissa Joan Hart, and I think it was called...
Oh, I heard about this.
It was awful.
Well, and wasn't it one of those Lifetime movies?
Yes. It was like Lifetime or Hallmark.
Maybe it was Hallmark.
Yeah. And like my friend liked the movie. My ex-friend, she liked the movie. I thought it was awful. And here's the thing. Nobody in Montana talks like that. It was like taking Texas and bringing it to Montana. And so when she was talking, she'd be like, yeah, then there are critters down. And I'm like, nobody talks like that down here. No one talks like that here. And so I'm like watching this movie. It's hard. And I understood it after. Had I not known they filmed down here?
I'm going to be completely honest here. And I think everything you're saying is valid, especially if I remove myself from Montana and like think about it from like the New Orleans perspective or wherever. Right.
Yes.
Like, I see the validity in that. And you are right. You are right in this. But I just don't care because I know so many Montanans who, like, do not care about anything outside of Montana and, like, have judged and think they know everything outside of the borders, where I'm like, I kind of enjoy watching them squirm and get upset. Here's the thing about me.
Yeah.
I am a perpetual outsider. I always look like I'm on the inside, but I'm not. That is a defensive mechanism that I've developed over the years because I moved around a lot when I was little. I've been in big cities. I've been in small towns and I've been in between, which I would say Helena's in between, right? I've been all over.
Yeah.
And so I always feel a little on the outside. So if I spend any given amount of time in any city, I will start to like notice that the annoying tendencies of a city, and I'd start to like pick away at that, and that's the thing that bothers me the most.
Yeah.
And with Montana, it is this absolute belief that we are the center of everything in the sun, and I hate it so much.
She was like horse wrangling in there, and I'm like, no one does that here. But also, I do remember seeing, like, I've seen
by the way, with that thing, where I can relate, and this is why it's funny that I take my stand, where I can relate is, like, when I was a kid, I lived in Oregon, and I would go back to Montana all the time, and then at a certain point, I moved to Montana, and I would come back to visit my friends in Oregon, and it was always the same question. It was not said in a crappy way. It was said in an honest way. Do you ride horses to school and stuff? Like, they really, really
because
that's all they saw in movies, is like, we ride horses everywhere and we're always on ranches or whatever. And I was like, no, it's like exactly the same as here, except for we don't have a bay. And people had a hard time wrapping their mind around it, and it would annoy me there. But then like I would go to Montana and they would have these preconceptions of how everybody is everywhere else. And I'm like, you're just wrong.
So, I'll say,
like I said, I'm perpetually an outsider.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I guess that makes sense.
Not for my genetic makeup, because I've moved around a lot.
Yeah, and see, I did too.
I'll be honest, man. I think this is a key to us being friends. Like, I mean, I think there's personality, but like, this always happens to me. I always gravitate towards other people that move around who are outsiders. And I do have friends who have like stayed in one place the rest of their lives, but the people I connect to the most,
no matter
what city I'm in,
it's
always the same story. They always like came from somewhere else. And that's always the people I mean, gravitate to.
Literally born and raised in Seattle, Washington. My mom worked for a company that we moved everywhere, because anytime a new business or a new company or something opened, you had opportunity to move there with being paid and all of that. And so I literally have lived Seattle, Cincinnati, Ohio, Cody, Wyoming. I've lived here.
So you're like
Oregon.
Way more intense. What part of Oregon did you live in?
I'll have to remember. I know that my grandma used to take us up to the mountains to go kilning. That's why I have an artistic background too. Like, there's things that people don't realize about me.
Probably like Southern Oregon.
I would say so. We used to stay in this like cabin in the woods. Sounds crazy, but we did. There was like this cabin. cabin in the woods. She would take us up, and her friend had it, and we'd go up to the mountains. And so that part of Oregon, I was real young though.
Yeah.
That was when I got my mouth. I always remember living in Oregon because I said my first cuss word as a child and got my mouth washed out with soap and spanking.
Oh man, the threat of the soap in the mouth. Soap in the mouth. I feel like that's such an Oregon
it
thing.
Is, and it
now
is.
That you just said that, I'm like, I don't think I ever heard that here, but in Oregon, people say all the time, "You want me to wash your mouth out with soap?
Wash your mouth out with soap?" And you're like, "No," even though it's like they only kept it in there for like 2 minutes, you know, because they're like not trying to.
Yeah, I never actually had it happen, but I had other older folks
lucky.
Say it.
I'm sure.
Cosmic Void was created by Alex Small and Jeremiah Perez. It's hosted by Alex Small and Xavier Cousins. Produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 was written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vivrette. The song is performed by Tonight We Ride. A Cosmic Void is a Redwood Sound Labs production.
Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help,
all right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together, they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.